that music mean to you? Well, of course, it's called the Bridal March. It's kind of like the Rocky song for brides. They win. Even now, marriage in many cultures and countries is a victory for the female and a defeat for the male. He gets his wings clipped. He's out of commission, on the shelf, forever. The whole thing starts with him getting on his knees to hand her a ring worth, what is it those De Beers assholes recommend, a 3 months salary? Who came up with that number? Here's the start of the bride music. Here's the start of Rocky. Kind of similar, aren't they? I wonder if Bill Conti, who wrote the Rocky theme, was doing an inside joke there. More crazy shit happens in and around romance and marriage than anywhere else in life. Like recently in India, where some unhappy father of the bride paid $150,000 to have his new son-in-law killed. Ain't love grand.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry. Hello,
Larry. Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
I wonder if there will be a Bollywood movie about that wedding. Everyone sings and dances at this huge reception, and then two assassins come out of nowhere and bury their Gurkha blades in hubby's neck while his new bride looks on. Ooh, hard to get happy after that scene. I attended a wedding recently, hadn't been to one in a few years, and discovered that they're pretty much the same as they always were. It was a really nice wedding at a beautiful spot in Southern California. Gorgeous bride, good-looking groom. And no shots fired, as there were at another wedding I attended long ago. You can check out that one in episode 16, Everybody's Crazy. You'll find that in the March 2017 archive at thatlarryshow.com. I'd have to say this wedding had some significant improvements over other weddings. They did not do the idiotic tossing of the bouquet. Those were always a shit show. I guess it was all in fun, but it always seemed kind of demeaning, like a desperado move. The DJ announces,
"Attention all you unattached losers. Get over there in a cluster while she throws her flowers and the lucky one will be the next to find a mate."
Who'd want to participate in that? Drunk chicks, that's who. The rest are just being good sports. Except for the girl who snatches that bouquet out of the clouds like David Tyree in Super Bowl 52. Some chicks probably train for months for the bouquet throw. Should be an Olympic event. A lot of wedding stuff is good sport stuff, right? You do it for your friends. Like those bridesmaids who have to buy those identical dresses, ugly enough to gag a maggot, usually with some stupid matching doily hat. I feel bad for those chicks. At least the purple tuxedos the ushers get are rented. Maybe worse than the bouquet toss was the throwing of the garter. A little softcore porn tableau, as if hormones aren't already running at peak capacity. The bride would give a garter to the groom to throw to the single guys. The chooch that caught that garter got to slide it up the leg of the girl who caught the bouquet while the band played the stripper. And that was supposed to, what, spark a romance? That would be another desperado play. And unless the bouquet catcher was a 10, they usually had some difficulty recruiting a crowd for that garter toss. And what if the bouquet catcher had no volunteers? Ooh. It probably happened somewhere in nuptial lore. People do some even more insane shit, usually called traditions, when it comes to weddings. I saw a documentary about some primitive tribe, maybe somewhere in the South Pacific or Amazon, I don't remember. And first off, everybody in the tribe thought it was sexy as hell to shove about an 8-inch wooden dowel, like the butt end of a pool cue, through the underside of their chin and into their lower palate. Looked real comfy and practical, too. Like having a permanent monopod to rest your head on while watching Home Shopping Network. And you never have to look for a coffee stirrer. Wonder what the young dudes would say when they'd eye some hot chick.
Hey, Joey, you see the chin dowel on that babe?
Yeah, look at the way it tapers. Pointy.
So in this documentary, there was a wedding about to happen, and the father of the bride wanted to be sure she was not marrying a wussy. So he takes his future son-in-law out to the woods, makes him stand on a tree stump. Then the old man gets a nice length of whippy, thorny wood, and he wails on the kid's lower legs and feet until they look like stewed tomatoes. Flayed the skin right off him. But he took it like a man. A man who was way too desperate for pussy. I saw a t-shirt about this. Cartoon bride and groom. She's grinning triumphantly. He's got a big-ass frown on his face. And the caption says, game over. I'll post it on the show page, too. Even now, in what people think of as modern times, marriage is often considered a victory for the woman. In many regions of the world, brides come with a dowry. In other words, a bribe for the husband.
If you marry my daughter, I'll give you 2 chickens, a goat, and a crankshaft from a 78 Buick. You want more? Okay. Here's a coupon. $5 off a bucket extra crispy at KFC.
Maybe it's about that biological clock. Women have a limited window of opportunity to make babies. Geezers can always find a significantly younger bimbo to marry them, can't they? Especially if they're rich geezers. It doesn't often work the other way around, almost never. If it does, the younger man squiring a significantly older woman is often gay, a companionship arrangement. Weren't Michael Jackson and Elizabeth Taylor inseparable for a while? What was that about? Maybe it's better we'd never know. Look how many women marry jailbirds. Charles Manson had lots of chicks asking for his tiny, bloodstained hand in marriage. Ooh, and that swastika between his eyes. Visual Spanish fly. Amazingly, some of those women were not bad-looking. Those nasty Menendez brothers who blasted Mummy and Daddy with shotguns in their Beverly Hills mansion. Those guys both have wives. Lyle actually has had 2 wives, Anna and Rebecca. Anna, the first wife, divorced Lyle when she discovered he was cheating on her by writing to another woman. I want to know how she found out. I get the cheating by text thing, right? Guys get sloppy with their cell phones. But how the hell did she get her hands on his letters when he's in fucking prison? The real mind blower about the story is not that two brutal murderers managed to marry women while doing life sentences. The mind is blown when you see these women. None of them is hideous. In fact, they'd be considered attractive by just about anyone's standards. Really, see for yourself. I'll post their pictures on the show page. Eric Menendez's wife is good-looking enough to be a network news babe. Really. And you wonder, how the hell does a guy in jail get to meet and marry a good-looking chick? Well, here she is to tell you herself.
I didn't set out to have a relationship with Eric. You know, I wrote one letter to him and he wrote back and I went to visit him in prison and our relationship developed.
You hear that? She wrote to him first. Imagine that. You wake up one Saturday morning, shower, dress, make the coffee. You got a whole day of nothing to do. But there's been something in the back of your mind you've been you've been meaning to get to. Oh, yeah. That guy. The one that painted the walls of a mansion with his parents' blood and brains. He's kind of cute. I think I'll just sit down and write him a letter. Now, let's see. Is he at Pelican Bay or Folsom?
Is she crazy? Is she nuts? You know, I get all that. And so it has been a very emotional experience. The only one that supports me is my mother, and his family is supportive. But other than that, it is very difficult.
I guess that's kind of the key word for that romance, huh? Difficult. We'll get to a dude that sent me an email about a difficult relationship in a little bit. You don't see many guys buzzing around women's prisons looking for wives. Why is that? Just about everybody has prolonged stretches without a girlfriend or boyfriend. Every chick they meet is dull or annoying or sounds like this.
And out a little bit. Green for thank you. Now poverty doing. You might like that one.
And no matter how hot she may look, who could listen to that for more than, 3 to 5 minutes? And afterwards, she'll want to cuddle and talk.
And out a little bit. Green for thank you. Now,
so why is it that so many people of either sex, we don't say gender here, they seem unable to connect? The stats for relationships and marriages are plummeting. People say they're lonelier than ever. Well, people never change and they never will, so it has to be the advent of social media. Somebody once said that marketing is cowardly selling. That's kind of true. The best and boldest and most effective sell in the world is in person, face to face. Which is why the world's biggest deals are not made on some fucking app. It's two people sitting across a desk or a conference table or walking a golf course. That's how deals, real deals, get done. Meeting women is deal-making, and it employs all the same principles. First, when you get in some chick's personal space, that's probably going to rattle her a little bit. And immediately, she's going to either like the idea of you being near her or not. And if you affect her negatively, she cannot help but signal her displeasure. Isn't that a fantastic time saver? Who the hell has time for 200 texts? And you get to really check each other out. Sight, sound, smell. And if it goes well, you'll have some touch and taste, too. If all goes according to plan, and you wind up hearing that wedding march, you've got about a 1 in 2 chance of divorce. Because love is a crapshoot. It's tough enough. And then, when you get meddlesome friends or relatives like this guy in India, you wind up a widow. Now that's a tough hand to play. There's lots more to this story, and the more you get into it, really the sadder it is. The girl was named Amrutha, just 21, and her boyfriend was Pranay. He was of a caste formerly called Untouchable, which I had assumed was like the poorest of the poor. Now they're called Dalit, I don't know. And as a group, they've done some monumental bootstrapping in Indian society, and some are now merging into the middle class. Amrutha, however, she was from a top caste called the Komari. Her old man's a real estate developer with megabucks. This caste system is so deeply encoded into their DNA, this guy actually said to his daughter, quote, "I can marry you to a beggar who belongs to an upper caste, but I don't want you to marry from a lower caste, whoever it is." Unquote. Ain't that some shit? She and her fiancé dated for years, and in college, he was studying engineering and she was into fashion. It was kismet, but they knew it would be a struggle, so they had a plan to marry and then split for Australia. But she got pregnant. That complicated things. They got married anyway. A small ceremony. There's a short video of the two of them, two really great-looking people who seemed perfect for each other. About a month after the wedding, she and her husband were leaving an appointment at the OBGYN when the killers struck. Before she passed out, she called her father, told him her husband had just been stabbed. She asked her father, "What did you do?" The murderers divided the town where they live. Here's where it gets almost incomprehensible. A whole lot of Dalits have rallied behind the widow, offering support for her and the baby. At the same time, a large contingent of people are siding with her father. A spokesman for them said, "The murder happened because their love was not endorsed." Wow. An attorney pal of Daddy also said, "There is a chance that other daughters of well-off people would be trapped in the name of love by miscreants." And now, fewer than 6% of Indians marry outside of their caste, and who can blame them? And similar executions are not all that uncommon. Talk about dangerous love, huh? As I mentioned earlier, I get emails, and one came to me that's remarkably apropos for today's show. It's from a listener up in the Bay Area, that would be San Francisco, to non-Californians, and he faces a situation not all that different from the girl on the other side of the world in India. "Hey Larry, love your show. Always a beacon of fun and good sense in this inside-out world. Thank you. I'll be entering my senior year of college in a few weeks. Since last summer, I've been seeing my girlfriend, and my family doesn't only not approve of her, they treat her so poorly that, well, it's atrocious. She's a few years older than I am, and she has a 3-year-old son. She's divorced from his father, who is incarcerated. My girlfriend, however, has a great job, is self-sufficient, and doing a great job raising her son. I've had a couple of serious girlfriends before, and my family treated them well, but they give her such a cold shoulder, they barely speak to her. I took her to a cousin's wedding a few weeks ago, and they acted as if she had leprosy. I love her. She could even be the one. And I'm starting to really resent my parents. Any advice? Thanks, Grant." Well, Grant, you're in a bit of a tricky spot. I assume you've confronted your parents about their rude behavior, and I'm guessing they denied or downplayed it. They don't have to love her, but I'll bet they do love you. And while she may thrill you in many ways, your parents are concerned for obvious reasons. If her ex-husband is a convict, that's one thing. But the fact that he's also the father of her son means that guy is going to be a part of her life as long as she lives. What's he in the joint for? Embezzling or murder? And even if he was deacon at the local church with a record like Mother Teresa, she's still a woman with a kid. I dated a few single moms, and to be perfectly honest, the kids were why those were real short relationships. The only kids I really love are my own. I'm just not that big-hearted. So, say you marry this girlfriend. Are you ready to see her jailbird ex every couple of weeks when he comes visiting for his custody turn? Or hell, maybe he's doing a 20-year pull. You going to accompany Mom and Sonny when they visit him at San Quentin? How about when her kid gives you static, and they all give static, trust me, and he says, "You're not my daddy," and flips you the bird? You ready for that? Grant, I once wanted to buy this kick-ass house at the beach. It looked really cool. I fell in love with it. Then I got an inspector in to have a look at it. It had wiring that wasn't up to code. It had feeble HVAC. It needed a roof. It had asbestos and some kind of cloud over the title. But still, I really dug that house. I felt as if it could be the one. Luckily, I had a great attorney, a no bullshit guy whose nickname was the Executioner. I called him and gave him the rundown on the house, and he said,
Larry, that house is fraught with difficulty. I don't care how much you like it. I won't even handle a closing if you decide to buy it. I'd be a shit attorney if I did. There's a million fucking houses. Find another one.
I'm going to parrot the executioner, Grant. Your girlfriend is fraught with difficulty. Find another. Your parents, while they are rude to her, probably just can't help themselves. And a senior in college shouldn't be dating anyone exclusively anyway. That's just foolish. Now, I'm about 1,000% sure this is not the answer you were hoping for, but you asked. Grant, thanks for listening and supporting the show. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. Special thanks to those very cool Patreonies who support this show. Yeah, I know I'm late on delivering the new bonus episode, but I think you'll dig it. It's a true tale about me, a supermodel with epilepsy, and a night with her in a famous New York Chinese restaurant. A dinner that included a psychotic drunk, two cops, and some cinema-worthy violence. And you can hear it all at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. And when you do become a Patreonie, you get lots more, like access to dozens of other bonus episodes, most of which are of a more personal nature. There are signed books, custom recordings, and advice on anything, as you just heard with Patreonie Grant. Follow this show on Twitter and Facebook. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar. You'll find it. My friends, whatever your status in life, single or attached to the love of your life, remember, once you close your eyes and go to sleep at night, there's nobody there but you. I'll see you next Tuesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.